Radio.
Who do we think we are? Models of parish that help or hinder our mission. A presentation by Lorraine McCarthy at the Proclaim 2016 conference. Brought to you by Credio and XT3.
Mainly what I'm talking about this afternoon is who we think we are as a parish community. A lot of what we hear to this conference is a conference on the new evangelisation, and it's about being called to change who we are as parishes so that we're bringing a fresh proclamation of the gospel to the people who maybe haven't been able to hear it before. Sometimes people in our pews, sometimes people who are baptised but disconnected from the church, and maybe even people further afield. But I found that one of the things that often stops us from being able to do that effectively is who we think we are as parish communities and what we think our parish communities are actually for. So we're just going to have a little bit of a look at that. So I think there's two kind of ways of looking at who we think we are, and one of them is who do people outside of the church think that the church or the parish is, and the second one is that question up the top there, who do we think we are? And I think they're both quite important if we're wanting to address this issue of why don't people come to us and how can we reach them? So we'll start with who do people outside the church think that we are? And in order to do that, I'm just going to show you this little video. And I think it's a good summary of what people outside the church tend to think people inside the church are about.
Why people don't go to church.
I can't come to church until I get my life together.
Church is how I got my life together.
Church is filled with a bunch of hypocrites. And there's always room for one more. All they care about is your money.
They care about me, not my money.
Dress code?
Yes, the code is wear some clothes.
Church, it just makes me nervous. I was nervous at first, and then I felt right at home. I'm not sure I believe everything that you believe.
But you can still belong.
Church is for wimpy girly men.
You want to say that again?
If you knew me and what I've done, you wouldn't want me.
If you knew me and what I've done, you wouldn't be worried.
You can come to my church even if you were brought up
Baptist.
Jewish.
Mormon.
Lutheran. Pentecostal.
Presbyterian.
Church of Christ.
Southern Baptist.
A little bit of everything and a whole lot of nothing. So please, come to my church.
Where nobody's perfect.
Where beginners are welcome.
Where socks are optional.
But grace is required.
Where forgiveness is offered.
Where hope is alive.
And where it's okay to not be okay. Really.
I think it's quite a good summary, though, isn't it? I've heard that so often. I don't go to church because they're only interested in your money, or it's only for people that are already holy. You know, that it's something that women do, not really men. That's particularly in some cultural groups. That they wouldn't know what to wear, or the only people that go to church are hypocrites, or maybe I'm not good enough. And I think many people in our wider community, people that aren't part of disconnected Catholics, perhaps even people in our schools, our parents in our schools or people in our pews have been influenced by a lot of those ideas. And I think one of the biggest tasks that we have as church communities today is to kind of build bridges of trust, because I think a lot of people have these very negative images based on church from their past. And the bridges of trust, I think, have to be built. They have to become, have positive thoughts about us, I guess, begin to see that we might have something that they want or something that, we can offer them for their lives before they'll be prepared to, move closer to God, really. So where a person is able to have that positive association with us, or, you know, with a believer or with a church, then they'll be able to begin to be a bit more curious and maybe then open themselves up to hearing a little bit more about Jesus. But that trust needs to come first. Our parish needs to build those bridges. And I just wondered if you wanted to have a little bit of a chat amongst yourselves again about how does your parish build those bridges of trust? You know, we might have play groups, for example, or schools sometimes can be about building bridges of trust. How do you build bridges of trust in your local community that enable people to have that positive image of Catholics or of the Catholic Church? So just have a little bit of a buzz for a couple of minutes. So would anyone like to share with the bigger group how they might build those bridges of trust in your community, or ideas that you've seen that you think are good ideas? Anyone come up with anything in that discussion? Yeah, Peter?
Yes, I think the best way of getting a relationship, we come from a small church community in South Australia, and where we are, and I find it's very important to talk to people. If you don't really know him, you take him home and give him lunch.
Feed him, yeah. Jesus did that a bit, didn't he? He was pretty big on the having meals with people.
Lorraine, we were just talking about, in my parish, we often have people who come to our parish and say that our parish is very friendly. I come from the Holy Spirit at St. Clair. And I think the reason for that is that we have a ministry of welcomers who are there on Sunday before Mass. And they look out for new people and welcome them and say hello to them and answer any questions that they've got. And that's made a big difference in our parish, I think.
Fantastic.
In our parish, fairly recently, they've introduced an extra for the baptism program where families would come and prepare their children with another family in the parish. But now Father invites the couple with their baby to come to Mass on the Sunday before, maybe a month before the baby's going to be baptised, and presents them then to the parish. And often there's morning tea afterwards, so that the other couples and families in the parish tend to come forward. And then when they see them a few weeks later, there's someone to say hello to them.
Yeah, no, that's really good.
We spoke about the importance of the children, welcoming the children into Mass, not always saying, they make too much noise and all of that. Father just kind of lets them do their thing. But also normalising the whole faith thing so that we can talk about these things without it being a special Sunday thing as opposed to life.
Yeah, we're not those weird people that do that thing on Sundays. One thing I think that's really interesting is that nearly everything that we talked about then is about welcoming. And I think welcoming presumes that people have actually got to our door so that we can welcome them in. And I think one of the things that the new evangelisation is calling us to is to actually invite, because we can have the most welcoming community in the world, but if people don't actually get to our door so that we can welcome them, well then, we're not going to be welcoming very many people. So there's a step beyond welcome, I think, which is actually inviting. So we're just going to leave that there now of what other people think that we are, to have a little bit of a look then at who we think we are. And I think just as people outside the church can have some fairly negative or unusual or different images about what they think church is, I think sometimes we can have some really different images that can sometimes really hinder our mission. We can have some really different images about what we think our parish is for. So I think, we can start, and if we are not really united in our own parish communities about what we think our parish is and what we think our parish is for, well, then we're not going to be able to build a consistent vision about what it is our parish is being called to do, so that we need to all be on the same page about that. And I think, you know, the new evangelisation kind of takes its root in the old evangelisation, or the original evangelisation, which was that passage from Matthew about go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptise them in the name of the Father and the Son of the Holy Spirit, and teach them to observe all the commands I gave you. So this is called the Great Commission. It's the mission of the church, and we're being called to go, to make disciples, to baptise and to teach. And I think over the years we've been very good at going. We need to go. The church itself has gone all over the world, but maybe at the moment we're not so good at going. We're waiting for people to come. We're also very good at baptising. Most of our parishes have heaps of baptisms, and we're very good at teaching. We have our schools, we have our wonderful homilies, we have all sorts of ways that we teach people in our faith formation programs as well. But at the moment, we're not very good at making disciples. And for people that were in the workshop here before this one, Clara quoted a lady, Sherry Waddell, and her research shows that less than 5% of the people sitting in our pews are missionary disciples, so that we're not particularly good at making disciples. I think the Pope has said, the Pope has said that this idea about making disciples isn't just an optional extra. He wants it to have programmatic significance and important consequences, and he's wanting all communities to devote the necessary effort to advancing along a path of pastoral and missionary conversion, which can't leave things as they presently are. Mere administration can no longer be enough. And so I guess in this kind of spirit of offering something around things that models of parish that are hindering us, I want to just have a look at Mellon's models of practical ecclesiology. It's a kind of a slightly tongue-in-cheek look at Father Mellon's work around what he sees as things that hinder our mission. It's from this book, from his work. So he talks about a number of models or ways that we can think about our parish that can sometimes not be particularly helpful. And the first one is the parish is a social club. That a lot of people think that parishes are, you know, where they're places where we all gather, where we promote human leisure and activities and community building types of things like bingo, card games, outings for holidays together, trips to the museum. I remember when I was growing up, we did nearly all our socialising in the parish community. We had Saturday night dances. We had Girl Guides and Scouts and, the Boy Scouts in our parish. We had a parish netball club. Nearly everything that we did, we socialised in the parish. I think today when we, and a lot of it is about community building, but I think today when we think about parish, we can put a lot of emphasis into running these parish social events so that we can spend time together. And it's all community building, but are we building Christian community? And I think there's a really important distinction there. One of the things that we can tend to forget is there's a difference between socialising and fellowship. Socialising is when we gather with people that we like and that we have a lot of things in common with, and it's very easy for that to become exclusive. You know, with in-groups and people that that we have a lot in common with. And when you come into a community that's like that, it can be very hard to kind of break into it. Socialising isn't the main mission of who we are as a Christian community. Years ago, the pagans looked at Christians and they said, you know, look at how they love each other and how they're accountable to one another and for one another. So Christian community is much more than about socialising. If we really want to use our facilities, our parish facilities for the evangelising mission of the parish, then we're going to struggle against this social image, the parish is a social club image of the church. Just recently, I had a bit of an example of that, and we just had an Alpha course in the parish that I live in, and we had a group of people, about 15 people, who wanted to join a scripture study, and so we needed a room with some data projection and stuff so that we could watch the DVD and have chats afterwards and maybe have a cup of tea. The only trouble is that the only room in this parish that's suitable for that was being used three times a week by the Pilates group. And the Pilates group had it on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, and on Tuesdays it was used for meetings. And on Thursdays there was another group. It was a an elderly citizens kind of card night. And so there actually was not a room in the parish that we could have this this Bible study. And so that's that kind of example. Like, they're all very good things. It's wonderful to have Pilates and it's really nice to have the card night. But the main mission of the parish, which is about evangelising people and growing disciples, couldn't really find a space. And we ended up being in this little corner where we had to bring our own cups, tea, coffee, milk, projector. We didn't have to bring our own chairs. I think that was the only thing in the room. And it was such hard work to run that thing that in the end we gave up after about four or five sessions of an eight-session thing. It was just each week we had to find which room was we could fit in a corner. And yet that you'd think that that would be an important focus of what that parish was trying to do. So we have to be really conscious of what we're using our buildings for. So we can hinder the mission of our parish by tying up energy and resources that would be better directed towards evangelising and fellowship, which is what we're supposed to be doing. The next thing I think we can look at is we can sometimes see parishes as a funeral home, and certain parishes are very good places to have funerals and they do become known around the place for that. So funerals are a very important part of the provision of pastoral care in a parish. And often people that won't come to the parish for any other thing will come to have their funerals. I was recently, last year, I was working in a parish in New York just for a few days visiting, and there was the priest there had a funeral there every morning at 10 a.m. There was one on the Monday, the Tuesday, the Wednesday and the Thursday. I don't know what he did on Friday because I wasn't there then, but every morning he got up and he did morning mass for the parishioners at 8:30. And then the funeral would arrive. And they were people that he'd never seen before, most of them. They would never come back again. And yet four mornings a week he spent nearly his whole morning doing the funeral. And I think people really want a Catholic funeral. So you don't have to be in a parish very long before you realise that funerals, and a lot of them, can really cripple our evangelising efforts. They sort of come in, and parish priests tell me that it can take 6 to 8 hours to organise a funeral, to speak to the family, to write their homily, to attend the prayers beforehand, the actual funeral, and then to go to the cemetery afterwards. In fact, 6 to 8 hours is probably on the low side of what it takes. And so I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't do funerals, but we do need to realise that we might have to make some choices around that and some guidelines as to who perhaps gets offered a mass for their funeral, maybe who would be the person that would run some of them. So it just can have, we can have this therapeutic model of our parishes where the parish exists to meet the needs of the parishioners, for the people who are in need. And that's a very good thing, but it can cripple our efforts for mission if we spend all our time looking after people with very tenuous connection to the parish with no real direct link into perhaps evangelising or making disciples. The next thing is, I think, parishes as a museum. We can have a fixation on the buildings, the beautiful buildings that a lot of our parishes have, and maintaining the things in the part of the past. And I think there's a really big tension there in our communities between going forward and living the mission that we have today, and then that tension between preserving the things and the communities of the past. Sometimes we can become really attached to kind of the outward forms and the buildings that we have, and the actual buildings that we have hinder our mission. I don't know whether any of you have been to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Greece. And soldiers march along outside that tomb and they have these pom-pom things on their shoes, which actually probably at some point had a hugely significant role. Hard to think what it would be. Maybe it was to scare off other people. I suppose if you saw a soldier marching with a pom-pom towards you, you might get a bit scared. But it's a kind of historical anachronism, and people still march with pom-poms on their shoes. And I think sometimes in our parishes we have things that happen in our parishes which is like pom-poms on the shoes of those soldiers. It's the way we've always done it. We've forgotten perhaps why we do it, but we like the way that they look and we keep doing it because that's what we've already done. 80 to 90% of our parish finances are often spent on maintaining, insuring, heating and cooling our buildings. And parish clustering and mergers, which is what's happening in a lot of places in Australia, can lead to some parishes having three or four, or I was down in Devonport Parish a couple of weekends ago, six sets of churches, presbyteries and halls. And everybody's very attached to all of those things. But sometimes it can really hinder what we're doing. And perhaps there's a need for our parishes to look at what our mission is today and how we might best use the physical resources that we have to maybe do a bit of maybe sell something, to put some communities together and release some resources into our missioning and pastoral work. And often actually our churches and the pastoral plants, the parish plants that we have, don't easily lend themselves to running groups, to welcoming people, to having things for children on Sundays. And maybe we need to look at how we might change our buildings to actually help us in our mission rather than having our mission hindered by this idea that everything always has to stay the same. The next thing that can hinder our vision of who we are is to see the parish as a kind of a bank. And this is a real maintenance model kind of idea, that the focus of the parish is maintaining the flock. And just to keep our parishes up and running, to keep our programs going and to keep running all out, to keep offering the sacraments to people, we sometimes feel like we've got to run faster and faster, and despite exhausting ourselves and working, you know, 26 hours a day and trying harder and harder, we're still losing people. And all of our energy goes into maintaining what we have and to pay off debt, and we don't even have any energy left to think about mission. I think in the past, parishes built and maintained their churches and any extra went into the bank. And you were seen to be a good parish priest, a good steward, if there was a good, healthy balance of money in the bank. And so there was a lot of thought about, you know, and we still do it, just keeping everything going, having a bit of money aside in reserve. But then we don't really spend any time or money employing people to actually build up our communities. So too often when funds are short in a parish, what happens is that they fire all the staff and they close down the programs and they can pay the loan off the building quicker. But then in 10 years they're going to have to close the parish because there's going to be no people left. So Christ almost calls us to a sort of venture capitalism, I think. That the resources that are given out of people's hard-earned money to the parish should be spent on the mission of the church and not stockpiled towards some kind of future eventuality. It's almost that stepping out in faith and spending everything that God gives us through what we're given in the collections, and having this real vision and getting people to buy into it. Because disciples are raised up through relationships, and we need staff to be able to do that, staff that can then form people in the parish who then go out and form those relationships. So I think, you know, sometimes we put too much emphasis on saving up the money and keeping the buildings running when it would be much more helpful to invest into our people. Another thing that can hinder our mission is to think of the parish as mainly a school. And the main missionary focus in some parishes is the school. So parish funds and staff resources are primarily used on the parish school and on the sacramentalising of children. And I think that happens again and again and again. One of the parishes where I worked in a little while ago is perhaps a little bit of an unusual parish, but they give $30,000 a year every year to their parish school to keep that running. But that parish is unbelievable. The presbytery is almost falling down. You know, you walk through the door and you trip over broken tiles. Nothing in the place works. The meeting rooms are really ugly. There's a parish secretary that works for 2 hours a day, four mornings a week, and there's nobody else there. And yet $30,000 a year goes into this school for 90 children, of which there are 8 Catholic families. And the principal of that school recently came up with a really good idea that the parish should sell some of its land to rebuild the school so that the school could be built back up again from 90 students, so that, you know, they were going to spend, he worked out they could sell the land and get $2 million and they could rebuild most of the school and then the school would get more students. And that was very seriously considered by the parish council, I'm very disappointed to say. So I think, you know, how much could that money make a difference to building up that actual parish, $2 million, if they sold some land, employed some staff, fixed up the meeting room so that you could actually, you know, be warm in winter and cool in summer. So the school was actually taking all of the resources out of that parish for 8 Catholic families. So I guess I'm not saying schools aren't a good idea, but we do need to, you know, Jesus told us to teach the adults and bless the children. And I think traditionally in parishes, Father James has said that we tend to teach the children and bless the adults. And so we need to work more intentionally perhaps towards a priority on our adults, and then they'll bring their children. So it's just something to think about. I'm not saying any of these things are bad things, but if they're what we primarily think our parish is, well, then that's something that's going to hinder our mission. The last one is a parish as a soup van. And not literally soup, but that parishes are primarily there to serve their parishioners and meet their needs, which they are to an extent. But, you know, there's a, you know, the Pope Francis says that an authentic faith is never comfortable or completely personal. It involves a deep desire to change the world, to transmit values and to leave this world better than we found it. But then he says that the worst discrimination which the poor suffer is lack of spiritual care. Our preferential option for the poor must mainly translate into a privileged and preferential religious care. And I guess that's just a little reminder that as parish, we are there to look after people and to show mercy and to feed people. But the mission is really important too. And sometimes if our whole parish direction is around service and serving people in our community, then we might be so busy doing that we miss the opportunity to actually go out in mission. Parish should primarily be seen as a place where competent apostles are formed and sent out. And parish energy resources should be used to form people to use their gifts, and then they bring Christ to the world through acts of love and mercy. So there's this idea that as parish, we do help people, we bring them in, but we're mainly about forming apostles who will then go out and do those works of mercy in the community. And can you see how much energy is generated around all this? Because the things that we know, the things that we love, the things that we've come to equate with what our parish is, when they're called into question a little bit, when we say that we might want to change something that we hold very dear in the service of mission, oh, it hurts, doesn't it? So I'm not saying that all of the changes have to happen, but just how deeply held some of these visions are, and that just maybe they might be hindering who we might be being called to be as a community, and that maybe we need to be open to just a few changes in how we do parish and how we do church at the service of a mission. And I love Archbishop Julian Porteous's quote here. He says, evangelisation is not an ecclesial marketing campaign. The church is not a philanthropic institution. It's not a humanitarian organisation. It's not a social service agency. It's not focused on professional excellence as an end in itself. The church does what she does because knowing Jesus Christ has so altered her approach to human life that she is inspired to self-sacrificing love and to an orientation towards the poor and needy. And so I think sometimes we can get caught in some of those top things and lose the reason for why we're doing it. Father James Mellon in this book, and I did say in the thing that we are mainly using his models here, he says that one way of looking at the parish is the parish as a photocopier. It certainly does.
It's frustrating. I can
relate to that. So he says the photocopier can be a kind of a symbol for evangelisation, disciple and missioning. So evangelisation is the drawing people in bit. So everything that we do as a parish, as a community, needs to be a tray feeding people into the photocopier. So your RCIA group, your Alpha, your schools, your baptism program, your play groups, your soup vans, your social groups, your invitation, everything that we do is one of those in trays into the photocopier. And then after the photocopier draws people in, a photocopier prints, copies, staples, punches holes, folds, depends on how much money you've got, what they can do. And that's the discipling part. That's where the baptising and the teaching and the forming happens. So people come to our parish community through one of those in trays, and they receive the imprint of Jesus on their hearts, and they become disciples once Jesus is imprinted on their hearts and minds through their involvement and formation in the parish. And I like the kind of the thought that, you know, when you change, you can still go back. But when a bit of paper goes into a photocopier, it actually is transformed once it's printed. And you actually can't take that print off. So transformation, once you've been transformed, you can only go forward. I really like that kind of idea. So people receive the imprint of Jesus and their lives through their formation in the parish. And then the last bit of the photocopying is when it spews it out at the other end, and that's the missioning, that's the sending out. People are sent out from the parish to go out and spread the message that's imprinted in their hearts. And the message becomes an indelible and integral part of who they now are. So the paper, after it's been drawn in and printed on and spewed out, is actually, it's been completely transformed and changed. So the on-ramps that funnel people into the process, and I guess the church works best when it experiences this kind of cycle. She evangelises, she makes disciples, and then she sends them out as missionaries to go and evangelise, to make more disciples who'll be baptised and taught and eventually sent out again. And it's just a cycle that goes on. And that's what a healthy parish looks like. When the church isn't healthy and she becomes turned in on itself, and that, you know, working the paper through, it's like that jammed photocopier that Father Brian was talking about. It becomes unheated, it becomes totally useless, and it gets put in a corner and there's no paper fed into it anymore. And maybe a lot of our parishes are a little bit like jammed photocopiers. We've got lots of programs, isolated programs, but no process really for pulling people in and transforming them and sending them out. The missions and the ministries that we have kind of don't exist as a integrated whole. They're kind of all clumped up. So I think often when we say who wants change, there's an awful lot of people that'll put their hands up and will agree that something needs to change. But when we kind of say, well, who wants to change, what are those very precious things that we have in our parish that we don't want to lose, then people become considerably less interested in the change process. So the characteristics of a mission-driven parish are that it's united in its mission and regularly talks about communal identity as one that makes disciples. We need to be talking about it all the time. And it has different evangelising experiences that connect and relate to one another, creating a clear and simple path for people to become disciples. So there needs to be an intentional transmitting of faith through systematic pre-evangelisation, kerygma and catechesis. Sherry Waddell put together this thing, and you can see that I was talking about trust down here, but people need to be evangelised, be drawn in, hear the kerygma and develop a relationship with Jesus and make some kind of decision around that, and then they're ready for catechesis and discipleship and being spewed out the other end of the photocopier. So there's very much this idea of an intentional staged process, and often in parishes we have heaps of catechesis but we have very little pre-evangelisation and initial proclamation, and that's why our photocopiers get a bit jammed. It's good to have a visible path for the community, and I think this is something that Father James Mallon's parish does very well, that everybody that's in his parish knows that they should be on this discipleship pathway, and he calls it the game plan. And so people are encouraged to, they have things that they do that are invitational. They have kerygma type stuff. People are encouraged to do alpha. After they've done alpha, they can either come on the team for leadership development or they can join ongoing connect groups, which is about community and praying together, and those sort of groups that you were talking about that go for 20 years and stuff, that's your permanent community. People are encouraged to serve, not just inside the parish, but especially outside the parish. Disciples are ongoing learners, so people in his parish are expected to do one learning thing a year, whether it's a retreat or a scripture study or something along the lines of learning something, and then that all culminates in worship. So that's that clear, visible discipleship pathway with lots of different offerings along the way, so that people know where they are and how they can grow. And that parishioners are expected to be part of that pathway. So a culture of discipleship where we're expecting, nurturing and sustaining the ongoing work of conversion in individuals. And I think too often in our parish communities, we don't really expect conversion and faith growth. We tend to think that their adults are already there and that they are already where they need to be and not have this culture of constantly growing and of nurturing and sustaining that growth in people in an ongoing year-in, year-out way for kind of everybody. And I think that's kind of the characteristics of a mission-driven parish that I think are really important. And I just want to finish up with this wonderful quote. It's Pope Francis's dream. I dream of a missionary option, that is a missionary impulse capable of transforming everything so that the church's customs, way of doing things, times and schedules, language and structures can be suitably challenged for the evangelisation of today's world, rather than for the parish's self-preservation. A church more mission-oriented to make ordinary pastoral activity on every level more inclusive and open, to inspire a constant desire to go forth and in this way elicit a positive response from all those whom Jesus summons to friendship with himself. Quite a dream, eh? And that's what I guess this conference is about and what we're hoping to grow in our own parish communities. Thank you.
That was Lorraine McCarthy with Who Do We Think We Are? Models of Parish That Help or Hinder Our Mission. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese, Australia. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.